Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo, and it is my great pleasure to welcome you to the festival's 2018 season, Creative Capitals. Time and again, from 14th century Florence to fin de siècle Paris and New York during the Harlem Renaissance, Western civilization's greatest artistic triumphs have emerged from the fertile ground of thriving metropolises. Fueled by the exchange of ideas and the incubation of great art, leading artists and innovators have gathered, turning these cities into cultural epicenters. Music at Menlo's 2018 season celebrates seven of Western music's most flourishing cultural centers: London, Paris, St. Petersburg, Leipzig, Berlin, Budapest, and Vienna. Cities whose spirit many of history's greatest composers have helped to define through their music. Audio Notes are designed to enhance your enjoyment and deepen your appreciation of the music you'll be hearing at the festival. I'll be joined by Artistic Co-Director Wu Han and Audio Notes author and producer Patrick Castillo to offer historical and cultural context and a variety of perspectives on this summer's concert programs. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you at the concerts.
No city captivates the imagination quite like Paris. For generations, the world's leading artists, writers, and thinkers, to say nothing of its young lovers and starry-eyed dreamers, have flocked to the City of Light. Her splendor has inspired some of the Western world's most innovative cinema, elegant cuisine, and irresistible music. Towards the turn of the 20th century, after opera had dominated French musical life for decades, Camille Saint-Saëns, César Franck, and others led a resurgence of chamber music. In their wake came some of the 20th century's most refreshing musical voices, from Jean Francais to Francis Poulenc.
Camille Saint-Saëns was one of France's most highly regarded musical figures over the latter half of the 19th century. A child prodigy who attracted considerable attention in his youth, he continued to be regarded in his maturity as an excellent technician in all parts of his craft. In addition to being a prolific composer across genres, he was also a gifted pianist and organist. Contemporaries often compared Saint-Saëns to Mozart. The Piano Trio No. 1 in F Major, Opus 18, composed in 1864 and published 3 years later, ranks among Saint-Saëns' finest chamber works. Though the piano trio literature was a rich one by the mid-19th century, spanning works by Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven, and others, Saint-Saëns had virtually no French models in the genre. While the Opus 18 trio might betray the influence of Mendelssohn's two piano trios, the work more so reveals Saint-Saëns to possess a distinct and distinctly French voice. Composed in Saint-Saëns' 30th year, the trio attests to French music historian Henri Prunieres' appraisal of the composer. Quote, "His style, precise, nervous, and clear-cut, is absolutely characteristic and also essentially French. It recalls that of 18th-century French writers, particularly of Voltaire. Nothing is superfluous, everything has its place, order and clarity are supreme." End quote. Following a four-measure curtain raiser, the Allegro Vivace presents the theme that will flow through much of the movement, a jaunty ascending figure answered by gleeful staccato eighth notes. This theme, offered in turn by cello, violin, and piano, illustrates the very delicacy and lightness of touch that over subsequent generations would become so strongly associated with French music. Its effervescent air lends credence to early biographers' suggestion that the trio was inspired by a holiday in the Pyrenees. The movement is dominated by the central theme and remains brisk and sunlit throughout. The piano presents a double-dotted rhythmic ostinato in pallid octaves to begin the Andante second movement. The violin accompanies this solemn, folk-like tune with an eerie octave drone, redolent of the clavecin viel, a type of hurdy-gurdy common to the French mountain regions. Saint-Saëns steadily elevates these rustic strains to chamber music of the utmost elegance, as when refashioning the double-dotted viel tune into a rhapsodic melody, floating atop an undulating piano accompaniment. A winsome scherzo follows, a playful repartee between string pizzicati and offbeat piano chords turns into a blithe gallop that propels the movement forward. The trio concludes with a cheerful allegro finale. It begins in unassuming fashion. Violin and cello trade plain, two-note utterances, accompanied by 16th-note figurations in the piano. But this music quickly escalates to a more vigorous adieu, accented by an occasional melodic zoom, like a car speeding by. Saint-Saëns soon displays a cunning sleight of melodic invention. What had previously seemed ornamental filigree, the piano's opening 16th notes, is revealed to be the movement's primary theme. The music quiets to a pianissimo, and the melody emerges, unadulterated, in a prayerful whisper. The speeding car persists, but now in hushed tones. The piano reverts to rippling 16th notes, with strings now clarifying the previously concealed melody. The clarity and brilliance of this music, representative of Saint-Saëns at his finest, sustain the finale to its radiant conclusion.
From the onset of the First World War into the 1920s, Paris became more than ever before an international hotbed of cultural activity. Gertrude Stein's Salon frequently hosted fellow American expatriates Ernest Hemingway, Ezra Pound, and Thornton Wilder. Picasso kept a home in Montparnasse, where he fraternized with the poet Guillaume Apollinaire, among others. Composers from across Europe and the United States, including Prokofiev, Arthur Bliss, and Aaron Copland, likewise flocked to Paris. In 1920, France became the adoptive home of the 38-year-old Igor Stravinsky, whose Rite of Spring had set Paris on fire 7 years earlier. Stravinsky's newly cultivated neoclassical style became a great influence on a group of rising young composers known as Les Six: Georges Auric, Louis Duret, Arthur Honegger, Darius Milhaud, Francis Poulenc, and Germain Taillefer. These six initially came together in 1917 in support of the composer Erik Satie, who had come under fire for his ballet Parade. Based on a book by Jean Cocteau and featuring cubist decor designed by Picasso, Parade was an exceedingly modern production for its time and scandalized Paris. The iconoclastic Satie mentored Les Six as the young firebrand composers steadily conquered Parisian musical life. Although Satie remained the subject of much public indignation among French audiences, his protégés would become modernist darlings of 1920s Paris. Les Six sought to cultivate a music that was distinctly their own, a musical perspective unique to France, which moreover captured the vitality of their time. Poulenc noted, quote, "We were tired of Debussy, of Florent Schmitt, of Ravel. I wanted music to be clear, healthy, and robust, music as frankly French in spirit as Stravinsky's Petrushka is Russian." Poulenc's musical ideal was one that integrated the élan of jazz, cabaret, and other popular styles into the Western classical tradition. His lighthearted sextet testifies to this ideal and remains one of the composer's most popular works.
The sextet's instrumentation, a standard wind quintet of flute, oboe, clarinet, bassoon, and horn, plus piano, gives perfect voice to Poulenc's compositional language. The ensemble affords the vivacity and variety of color necessary to allow Poulenc's sharp and at times biting humor to come through. His deployment of wind instruments in the opening Allegro Vivace presents a technicolor palette of timbres to match Poulenc's impish, melodic, and harmonic language. This ebullient opening movement betrays as much a debt to Stravinsky's neoclassical style in its textural clarity and melodic immediacy as to vaudeville or even circus music. Each voice excitedly emerges to the fore, then just as quickly recedes to the background as in a game of whack-a-mole. Poulenc was moreover his generation's leading composer of melody, or romantic French song, and throughout the sextet, the winds issue cantabile lines in pseudo-vocal expressive fashion. A thoughtful bassoon monologue leads to a slow middle section, featuring noirish solo lines supported by a pulsating piano accompaniment. A honeyed oboe melody begins the sextet's second movement, a divertissement rife with piquant chromaticism. As in the preceding movement, each voice soon comes to the fore for its melodic turn, whether in solo passages or various duo combinations. This vaguely sultry music gives way abruptly to music of almost inane glee. But the movement returns to its earlier material to close on a more contemplative note. Despite the sextet's overall lightness and character, and in particular, its middle movement's designation as a divertissement, this music nevertheless lends the work a certain gravity. It attests to Poulenc's appraisal of the music of France. Quote, "You will find sobriety and dolor in French music, just as in German and Russian. But the French have a keener sense of proportion. We realize that somberness and good humor are not mutually exclusive. Our composers, too, write profound music, but when they do it, it is leavened with that lightness of spirit, without which life would be unendurable." End quote. The sextet concludes with a high-spirited prestissimo finale. The composer and pianist Jean Francais produced an oeuvre comprising more than 200 works across genres, as characteristically French as his name. Francais' neoclassical language betrays the influence of his compatriots in Les Six, and, by extension, their guiding light, Stravinsky. In his personal pantheon of musical idols were Mozart, Schubert, Chopin, and shoulder to shoulder with these, Emmanuel Chabrier and Francis Poulenc. The melodic and textural clarity that characterizes these composers' music would likewise distinguish Francaise. Add to this a sense of irony, most apparent in his theatrical works, but which permeates his instrumental chamber music as well. Francaise's string trio, composed when he was only 21, nevertheless reflects an assuredness of style and illustrates these hallmarks of his musical language.
The opening Allegretto Vivo, played with muted strings throughout, features brisk staccato 16th notes, underpinned by cello pizzicati. Snatches of suave melody briefly emerge, only to quickly cede the floor back to the fleet staccato figures. Clipped staccati and piquant pizzicati continue into the scherzo, giving the movement a similar impish energy to the allegretto, but now without muse. The full-throated color becomes especially salient in the unapologetically boorish trio section. Mutes are replaced for the debonair andante. Cantabile melody carries the movement, supported by a crooning accompaniment. The rambunctious energy of the allegretto and scherzo returns for the work's rondo finale.
César Franck represents an important dimension of France's musical climate in the latter half of the 19th century. In addition to his role in the renewal of French instrumental composition, Franck was one of his generation's great musical pedagogues, cherished by his students at the Paris Conservatoire as a surrogate father figure. Franck guided a generation of French composers wrestling with the influence of Richard Wagner on Europe's musical landscape. Wagner's revolutionary philosophies on art and music in the late 19th century seduced many young composers, who strove to emulate his stylistic innovations. Others developed a strong ambivalence towards Wagner and regarded him as a symbol of the prevailing German aesthetic, a backdrop against which to define their own language. Thank you. Franck's fascination with Wagner is evident in his au courant approach to harmony and form. But rather than reverently mimic Wagner, Franck absorbed that influence and integrated it with the fundamental values of the classical era to ultimately serve his own musical vision. John Trevitt and Joël-Marie Fauquet have noted in Franck's late chamber works, quote, a balance between his inherent emotionalism and his preoccupation with counterpoint and classical forms, a double allegiance to the Viennese tradition on the one hand and to Liszt and Wagner on the other, end quote. The result of this duality is a compelling and individual voice that pointed French music towards the 20th century. Franck's piano quintet in F minor, completed in 1879, impresses with its sheer intense expressive passion. The work's overwhelming pathos has even offended some. Following the quintet's premiere in 1880, with Franck's close friend Camille Saint-Saëns at the piano, Franck joined Saint-Saëns on stage and presented the quintet's original manuscript to him as a token of his gratitude. Saint-Saëns, to whom Franck had dedicated the quintet, expressed his displeasure with the work by refusing the manuscript and walking off stage. Another listener whose favor the piano quintet failed to win was Franck's wife, who suspected that its visceral power could have only been inspired by amorous feelings for another woman.
The quintet opens with a powerful declamation in the strings. The piano answers with a thoughtful, lilting soliloquy. This dialogue launches the movement's slow introduction in turns tender and ardent. The temperature rises considerably as the introduction yields to the main allegro section. Within the allegro, Franck transfigures the piano's earlier soliloquy into the movement's second theme. The French pedagogue Nadia Boulanger surmised that Franck's piano quintet contained more instances of the extreme dynamic markings pianissimo and fortissimo, very, very soft and very, very loud, than any other work in the chamber literature. Indeed, the atmosphere remains relentlessly feverish throughout this first movement. Franck's thick chromatic harmonies further fuel the music's anxious energy. Thank you. Though markedly less extroverted, the second movement, marked Lento con molto sentimento, loses nothing of the first movement's ardor. Amidst the movement's melancholic sighs, the lilting piano soliloquy from the first movement reappears. Following a quietly frenzied introduction, the finale's impassioned first theme sweeps in above a diabolical triplet accompaniment in the piano. The understated second theme recalls the melancholy of the slow movement. Franck develops each of these themes throughout this dramatic sonata form finale, restlessly expanding its emotive breadth. Before the work's fiery conclusion, Franck looks wistfully back once more to the quintet's cyclical theme. The first violin, marked pianissimo, dolcissimo, molto espressivo, longingly reprises the first movement's piano soliloquy.
Audio Notes are authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Camille Saint-Saëns' Piano Trio No. 1 in F Major, Opus 18, is performed by the Rembrandt Trio and appears courtesy of Sono Luminous. Francis Poulenc's Sextet for Wind Quintet and Piano, Opus 100, performed by Tara Helen O'Connor, Stephen Taylor, Romy de Guise-Langlois, Peter Kolke, Radovan Vladkovich, and Jean-Eflam Bavouzet. And Jean Francais' String Trio, performed by Yura Lee, Richard O'Neill, and Nicholas Kanalakis, appear courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. César Franck's Violin Sonata, performed by Arno Sussman and Orion Weiss, and Piano Quintet, performed by Gilles von Sattel, Arno Sussman, Ian Swenson, Richard O'Neill, and David Finkel, appear courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Audio notes are a copyrighted production of Artist Led.